Dr. Cruz is a health scientist with the Vision Health Initiative in the Division of Diabetes Translation in the National Center for Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion at CDC in Atlanta. Dr. Cruz's specialties are vision impairment and aging, caregiving, and disability. His research interests also include health disparities among people with disabilities and aging and disability. In 1998, he joined CDC. He's written nearly 100 scientific articles and 2 books. Vision Loss in an Aging Society was published in 2000. The Multiple Dimensions of Caregiving and Disability, published by Springer, will be released late this year. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, thanks for the introduction. It's great to be with you guys. This feels very comfortable to be here. So I hope I don't embarrass myself before my colleagues here. But first, I want to thank a big thank you to Xu Fang, who did the analysis for these data. I rely on her. She holds my hand, makes me look really good. But we have other colleagues who are involved in with this. Judy Stevens, who's at CDC, who's kind of this wonderful falls resource for the nation. She's single-handedly defined falls as a topic at CDC. Shinji, who likewise makes me look good, and our team lead, Janann Sedin. So that's the team that kind of put this together, and I have no disclosures. For those of you who think that I am stark raving mad, I just want to prove that this is the newest addition to our family, not the goat. But Ripsime, who's 7 years old, joined our family from Armenia in March. So I'm 65 with a 7-year-old daughter, and either it will keep me forever young or accelerate my demise. So anyway, so that's part of what's happening. So I want to talk a little bit. So today, what I want to talk about is falls, vision loss, mostly, I think I'm going to affirm what you know, but I think it gives a direction for the research. I think falls research in vision is extraordinarily important. There's tons and tons of articles that have been written about the topic, but I don't think there's a synthesis of that. So people have kind of gone their own way, and I'm kind of going down my own path today, but I think we need to have some convergence in that work. but what we know is that 1 out of 3 adults over the age of 65 falls every year, so it's common. Among older adults, 65 and over, falls to the leading cause of injury death. And then Judy Stevens published an article, I think it was year before last, looking at the association between traumatic brain injury death and traumatic brain injury and hospitalizations and falls. So what happens in falls is people fall and they hit their head on something. And so it's just not a fall and they get on the ground. But when they fall and hit their head, then that can cause traumatic brain injury. And what she found was that TBIs accounted for 46% of total fatal falls among older adults, which I think is absolutely remarkable and I think points to the gravity and the importance of this topic. And as soon as I read the article, I called her up and I said, is there a vision variable in your data set so we can pull out people with vision impairment? And there was none. So there's an opportunity to investigate this probably later down the line, but not using her data set. So what I want to do is look at self-reported falls in the past 3 months among community-dwelling adults age 65 and over who have vision impairment. I'm using the BRFSS data set. For those of you who don't know, BRFSS was established in 1984. It sampled 350,000 people in 2008. It's the world's largest random digit dial telephone survey. And the core questions for the BRFSS are asked in all 50 states and territories. So there's a core set of questions. BRFSS either has followers or it has detractors. I tend to like the BRFSS primarily because it provides state-level data. It's all self-report, so it has huge limitations in regard to that. People are moving away from landline phones to cell phones and other things. BRFSS is aware of that and trying to make accommodation to pick up people who use cell phones and using multiple methods now in addition to random digit dial. So it's trying to keep up with that. In the BRFSS, There's a vision module that was established in 2005. There are 10 questions in that module. Two of the questions deal with visual function. I'll talk about those in a second. Several questions deal with access to eye care. Do you have insurance? When was the last time you had dilated eye exam and so forth? And then there's a set of four questions that deal with eye condition. Now, I'm not going to talk about that today, but just as we talk about the survey, those survey questions ask, has a physician or other healthcare professional told you that you have macular degeneration, diabetic retinopathy, and so forth? And what we see is fairly low counts, and that's kind of what I'd expect, because two major limitations in the question. Number one is you have to have gone to a physician, and so it's an access issue. So if you haven't gone, then that group is left out. And then people have to recall what the physician told them. And as we all know, people aren't the best reporters of their eye condition. So it's a very low count. But knowing that, it's relative data. So we have data from every state that gives us a sense of what that is across the country. And what we know about that pattern generally is that old populations are reporting a higher prevalence of various eye conditions. Now, what I should mention is that CDC developed I was around in 2005, helped develop that module, and was very proud to be a part of that. In order to do the BRFSS at CDC, CDC has to pony up $250,000 just to provide the infrastructure for that module. And then each state, each state has different costs, but it may be $30,000, $40,000 to implement the BRFSS within that. We've surveyed 22 states, I think, or 23 states so far, but our budget was eliminated this year, so we are discontinuing the BRFSS. So we will no longer have state-level data to track this. We'll have national data, but when we look at the data, there's great variation from state to state in the prevalence of eye conditions and visual function. So we're losing that, even with the limitations, we're losing that potential richness. So a little sour grapes there, we're out of business. Now, let me talk a little bit about the methods. We're using 2 years of data, 2006, 2008 BRFSS data from 17 states, sample sizes about 38,000, all over the age of 65. The outcome variable is self-reported. Self-reported falls within the last 3 months. So this is a three-month window, one or more falls. There is this follow-up question that asks how many. We're not investigating that. We just want to see if there's a fall. The exposure variable, it deals with visual impairment status. Now, there are two questions that we use to create our case definition for vision difficulty in this survey. The two lead questions in the vision module are: how much difficulty, if any, do you have recognizing a friend across the street? There's limitations in that question. Response categories are no difficulty, a little difficulty, moderate difficulty, or severe difficulty. And then the other question is, how much difficulty do you have reading, it's like newspaper print on this, and bottles down your telephone, and so forth. So it's a distance question and a near question. Response categories are the same. No difficulty, little difficulty, moderate difficulty, severe, or unable. So what we've done in this analysis is that we created three categories: a no response to either question, no response to both questions, a little response to either question, and is a moderate severe response to either question. That's our moderate severe difficulty. So what we want to look at here is this more of the dynamic sense of what's going on in vision. And what I suspect about this group, the people who are reporting a little difficulty, we don't know. They're significantly different from the other two groups, but I don't know what a little difficulty means. But what I suspect is that moderate severe difficulty is going to pick up the people that we're kind of interested in, who have really refractive error, where they have pathology that's affecting function. Okay, so covariates, we looked at race, ethnicity, educational attainment, incomes, age, sex. In terms of statistical methods, mostly cross-tabulation, multivariate logistic regression. And, okay, here's my question that I just gave to you. Now, in terms of the false question, there's a core false question that is a part of the BRFSS core in even years. So we had to jump from 2006 and 2008. There's no false question in 2007. And then the question is, in the past 3 months, how many times have you fallen? The response category is the number of falls. It can be 300. The field will accommodate however many you want. But the case definition for us is any self-reported fall. So these could be multiple fallers. We don't know, but one or more falls. So let me give you a sense of our findings. This is just looking at the number of people, percent distribution of people who report no, little, moderate, extreme difficulty by age category. So the tall, don't you like this orange? I mean, you know, a little color contrast here. But anyway, the tall orange are people reporting no difficulty. In each category, it's about 20%. So the people reporting a little difficulty is kind of stable. That number is kind of stable by each age group. But where you see the increase is among people who are reporting moderate extreme difficulty by age group. So it goes from 13.3% for those 65 to 74 to 22.5% for those 85 and over. So we're just seeing an increase, which you would expect. There's nothing unexpected about this at all. In terms of falls among all older people, we get a similar kind of pattern. For people 65 to 69, 13.2% reporting any fall during the last 3 months. And for people 85 and over, it's almost twice as many, 23.6%. So we're getting this kind of gradual, linear kind of increase among the populations. So what we wanted to look at here now is, we're taking the two sets of variables. We want to look at falls among older people reporting no, little, and moderate extreme difficulty. Difficulty seeing by age group. So now we've got fairly fine increments. We're looking at people 64, 69, 70, 74, 75, 79, 80, 85, and 85 plus. And by having a number of states, we're really able to do this. But what you see is everybody's falling. You know, it's not people with vision problems who are falling, but everybody's falling. And it seems to be predicted by and large by age. So you see 9% of people 65, 69 with no difficulty seeing, they're falling in that age group, goes up to doubles that by people who are over the age of 85. But then look, what's of particular interest to me then are the people with little, whatever that means, little difficulty seeing, and people with moderate severe difficulty. So it goes from 20.6%. They're already in the 65 to 69, they're already twice as likely to fall among that age group with the vision problems. Then go up to the 85 plus, where it's 33. So if you assume 10.9 is our base, then you know we've got three times the number of falls among people 85 and over. So we need to pay attention to a number of things in this, and one of them is the older age group and the concurrent vision loss among those groups. So we're seeing an accelerated rate of falls. And this just deals with, this is kind of how I generally do tables. You know, it's like inaccessible tables. What we see is that vision impairment and falls are associated with lower educational status and lower income. Then, what I wanted to look at now, and the last part, the last section of this presentation, I want to look at people's self-reported health and the association with falls, and then I want to look at three comorbid conditions, and walk those through. So you see, number one, the people who are reporting excellent, good, very good health report fairly low levels, by contrast, of vision impairment across the population. People who report fair poor health are more likely to report substantial vision loss. So you've got two things going on here. You've got people with high rates of vision loss among that group, a third of the population, and they're also reporting fair poor health. And I think fair poor health is that self-report, it tells you something and you have to tend to what that is telling you. But these people perceive their health as poor and vision is in that mix. So now I want to look at diabetes, heart disease, stroke, and stress, depression. These are the variables that we have available to us in the BRFSS. And so what I'm looking at are two groups, people with no diabetes and people with diabetes. And in each of those groups, I'm looking at people reporting no difficulty seeing, little difficulty seeing, and moderate difficulty seeing. And interestingly enough, there's no significant difference between those reporting no difficulty seeing and moderate difficulty seeing, but the difference is in those reporting little difficulty seeing. And that group is 40% more likely to report falls. So here's this group, which I would expect to be the moderate, extreme difficulty seeing would be the group that's highest at highest risk and did not prove to be so. The second group then is falls among people with heart disease, and let me check that, because I think, well, I guess we found that those reporting moderate severe vision impairment were statistically significant. How am I doing? 2 minutes? Wow. Yeah, I thought it was going to be done 10 minutes ago. Okay. Then we look at people with and without stroke. The major differences are among those people reporting no difficulty and those reporting moderate severe difficulty. You'd expect that, I think. That's, you know, very predictable. And then among the groups who report who have stress, depression, whatever that means. I mean, that's the question we ask, so that's the variable that we've got. In all cases, the differences are significant, and people are more likely to fall among each of those groups. So what's the conclusions? Increased falls associated with poor vision and advanced age. Kind of know that. Increased falls among people reporting moderate extreme difficulty seeing associated with poor health status and having lower socioeconomic status. Increased falls associated with severity of vision loss and presence of comorbid conditions. Patterns uneven, we need to pay attention to that. And in comorbid conditions, I think there's an article done years ago by Lois Verbrugge, and she was very interested in this effect of comorbid conditions. And she used the term propelling effect. I thought it was really an elegant way to describe what happens when you have these comorbidities and they're interacting with each other. They really have a propelling effect to create disability and participation restriction. So recommendations, I think, fairly simple, but it, you know, they haven't occurred. We simply need to address vision impairment as part of our comprehensive public health strategies. It needs to be a part of cardiovascular health interventions, need to be a part of arthritis interventions, need to be a part of diabetes interventions. Exercise and conditioning, kind of using L's example, the removal of trip hazards, increased elimination may decrease the likelihood of falls. We don't know the precursor for falls. I think we're pretty naive when we think it's kind of a trip hazard, but it could be medical error. People could be over-medicated, they'd be under-medicated, especially when you think about how we label medicines and so forth. So we don't know if it's a proximal event or a distal event that has really precipitated that. I mentioned falls. Okay, recommendations. Attention to health promotion among people reporting vision impairment may decrease the risk of falls. You think about, for example, let me just give one example. If people are exercising and conditioning, they're thoroughly conditioned, and they hit a trip hazard, they'll be able to, or they're more likely to recover from that fall. If they're stiff and they've been sitting all day and they're getting up and they hit the trip hazard, then they're just going to go on over. So we need to embed a public health approach into this intervention. That's it. Thank you very much.